Our second scripture goes a little bit farther down in the story as we meet Jesus, his disciples, and Judas in Gethsemane. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." While he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, arrived. With him was a large crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, "The one I will kiss is the man. Arrest him." At once he came up to Jesus and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and kissed him. Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you are here to do." Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and arrested him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. One thing y'all may not know about me is that I am a big friend guy. My life has always been defined by deep friendships. As one of my friends once described it, he said that I am a four quarters and not a ten dimes guy. You may have heard that before. I prefer four deep relationships to ten sort of less deep relationships. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. There's a picture of me and some friends from college on a trip to Maine. It's another one of me and a good friend. I did a poll on the first service. Raise your hand if you'd like me to bring the mustache back. Yeah, there was about four, and if that was more, I was like seven or eight. We'll see what happens. Friends are so important. Laughter with friends is so important. If someone were to ask me, "What do you, as a parent, as a father, want for your two girls most in life?" It wouldn't be that they get into a prestigious college. It wouldn't be that they get the job of their dreams, even. I think the number one thing I would wish for my girls is that they would have the privilege of finding deep friends. One term I have loved for a while is that of soul friend. Not S-O-L-E, but soul. S-O-U-L, soul friend. Do you have a soul friend? It's not just someone that you connect with. It's someone that you almost know on a soul level. And I don't just mean soul mates. I mean the friends around you in life, like Batman and Robin, or Abbott and Costello, or Harry and Hermione. This is one of my soul friends, Colin. I met him in seminary. He's a loud Texan who made it his goal in seminary to make me laugh in front of every prestigious professor possible. And usually he did. What makes a soul friend is not just someone who connects with you, but someone who you let into your life, right? Beyond the facades and the masks that we wear, someone who sees the real you, scars and all, who has been with you on the mountaintops of life, but also in the valleys, seen you at your worst, and stayed, nevertheless. Jesus had friends. I heard a joke recently that I thought was really funny. It said that the true miracle of Jesus' ministry was that he was a man in his 30s who had 12 male friends. True enough. We take it for granted sometimes that Jesus chose for his ministry to be surrounded with 12. He didn't go off and heal and teach on his own. He had disciples. And disciples aren't just students in the classroom. They're much more than that. Being a disciple meant going all in into a total way of life. It meant following Jesus everywhere he went, watching his every step, his every move, his every word. It meant doing absolutely everything you could do in your power to imitate your teacher, your rabbi, to please your teacher, your rabbi. And Jesus traveled around with these 12 disciples for 3 years. Now, I've been on some 3-day-long backpacking trips, and at the end of it thought, man, we got pretty close, this group of us. Imagine 3 years, how close-knit you would be. They weren't just Jesus' disciples, is my point. They were his friends. They were his friends, his best friends, his soul friends. The crowds that gathered around Jesus when he was a popular teacher heard his teaching and maybe even saw some of his miracles, but these 12, they saw Jesus' tears in private. They saw his fatigue. They saw the weight of the ministry that he carried. Perhaps there's a little lesson in there about the church, that while we are about many things, one thing we absolutely must be about is friendship. Judas and Jesus were friends, close friends, maybe even soul friends. And that's what makes what Judas does to Jesus so unimaginable. The word we use to describe what Judas did to Jesus, the word that Pastor Laura just taught our children, it's the word betray. I think betrayal is one of those rare words in today's world that still carries its weight. We don't just throw it around willy-nilly, and maybe that's because it cuts so deep. You can't really betray a stranger or an acquaintance. You can offend them. We talk a lot about offending and not offending in our culture. We don't talk much about betrayal, though, because it's only something that happens when you've truly given yourself over to someone else, when you've given them a level of trust that others aren't allowed, when you've put down the drawbridge of your life and let them into the castle. The arena for betrayal isn't work colleagues or social friends or social media. Betrayal is what happens in families, in marriages, in sibling relationships, in churches, and in soul friendships. Maybe the best way to sum it up is that you can only be betrayed by someone and something that you truly love. Maybe you know the bitter taste of betrayal. Maybe someone who was supposed to love you broke your trust in a painful, unimaginable way. I remember when I was in my mid-20s and I first found out that the pastor I had grown up with my whole life had been let go of his job and asked to step down because of a long-time affair that he had been having the whole time I was there, from birth to age 18. He was the first pastor I had ever met. In my mind, when someone said the word pastor, it was his face that I saw. And I hadn't been at that church for 5 years. I was well on my way into adulthood, but the feeling that I felt when I heard was betrayal. Today's story doesn't offer easy answers for that deeply painful human reality. But as it relates to the worst things that human beings and family members and friends do to one another, it does offer us this, that God knows intimately the feeling of being betrayed. Jesus' road to the cross is paved with many things, but chief among them is betrayal. Before he died, Jesus' best friend, his soul friend, Judas, betrayed him. Every time we take communion, we remember this betrayal. We even reenact it. The first words of the liturgy are, "On the night he was betrayed." This is Leonardo da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper. Maybe you've seen it at one point or another. If you look closely, you can see that Jesus' face is looking beyond where the other disciples are looking, looking somewhere that none of them can look. It's forlorn. He's lost in thought, absorbed in somewhere else. And the disciples are in a frenzy because Jesus has just dropped an absolute bomb. "One of you will betray me." You could see the disciples arguing amongst themselves, scoffing, whispering, talking smack, as friends do. They react as any of us would have reacted if a friend of ours put forth that accusation. "Surely not I, Lord." I'm going to zoom in a little bit on that picture. You'll notice just two to the right of Jesus is Judas. He's not arguing with anyone. He is the only one who looks straight at Jesus. He is the only one who sees the pain in Jesus' eyes. He's just close enough to have a hushed conversation over the noise of a Passover dinner. The other disciples had been calling Jesus Lord, a term of respect and authority and endearment. You can also translate Lord as master. "Surely not I, master." But Judas keeps his language cold and distant. as he mouths the words, "Surely not I, teacher." In fact, Judas will not call Jesus Lord for the rest of the story. He'll remain at an arm's length. And to that, Jesus responds with words that are hard to translate, maybe because Jesus didn't know what to say to his friend. My favorite translation of them is, "You just said it." "Surely not I, teacher." "You just said it." Jesus knew. He knew. I'm not sure how, but he knew what Judas was doing. And then Jesus does something that we would not expect. He serves Judas communion anyway. So if you ever feel like you're not worthy enough to take communion, just remember that Judas is first in line. This isn't just the disciples' Last Supper or Jesus' Last Supper. This is Judas' last communion before he sets the plot of Jesus' betrayal and before it ends with Judas taking his own life. So this leaves us with a big question. Why did Judas do it? Why did Judas betray his dearest friend and mentor? Why do we betray the ones that we love? Why do they betray us? In search for a neat and tidy conclusion, which we all long for, right? Scholars and pastors have come up with several answers for why Judas would have done this. The first is money. You heard Salem read the words that Judas goes to ask the chief priests. By the way, whenever you hear the word chief priests in the Bible, think pastors. So we three pastors up here are implicated in this story, unfortunately. Judas goes to the local pastors and says, "Hey, I've got an idea. How much money will you give me to betray Jesus?" And they offer him 30 pieces of silver, which is not a very significant amount of money. Not life-altering in any way, maybe $1,000. The second option is the devil made me do it option. Not in Matthew, but in Luke and John, we get the idea that the devil has been moving around the chess pieces and orchestrating events in order for Judas to betray his friend. The third reason is interesting. It's bound by history, and it's that Judas wanted to jumpstart a revolt. This is probably one that you're not as familiar with. The Jews had, at that time, been under the thumb of Roman occupation for many years. They were not a free people, and they grew tired of being in chains and paying endless taxes. So there was a group that rose up, freedom fighters, revolutionaries, called the Zealots, because they were zealous. Zealots took matters into their own hands. They would kill Roman soldiers. They would sow discontent among the people. They wanted a political uprising to overtake the government. Some suggest that Barabbas, y'all remember Barabbas? Barabbas is the one that they exchanged for Jesus, that Barabbas was one of these revolutionaries. It's also likely that a few of Jesus' disciples were maybe among this group. Many think that Judas was, in fact, a zealot before he became a disciple. So some wonder if Judas just got fed up with Jesus, got fed up with his individual salvation, his miracles and his teachings, and said, "Jesus, come on, let's do something, right? Let's change things." Maybe Jesus wasn't radical enough for Judas. The last option is closely knit with that third one. It was commonplace in the first century for Jews to believe that there would come one day a leader who would arise. Like if you've ever seen The Matrix, Neo. It's like a Neo, a savior who arises out of nowhere to save them from their captors through a violent campaign with sword and shield. This one, this figure, was believed to be called the Messiah. Say Messiah. Messiah. By the night of the Last Supper, all of the disciples would have already believed that Jesus was this figure, that he was the Messiah. He had already told them that in secret. So maybe Judas was betraying Jesus because he was disappointed at the kind of Messiah that Jesus had turned out to be. Judas couldn't handle that Jesus preached, "Turn the other cheek, pray for your enemies, walk the extra mile, blessed are the peacemakers." That is not the stuff of revolution. To be honest, I don't know exactly why Judas betrayed Jesus. Maybe one of these options, maybe all of them, maybe something else entirely. when it comes to human acts of evil and darkness, things like betrayal, most of us want clear and easy answers. We want to know why. We want to know exactly why, because the other possibility is too difficult to imagine, which is that things like evil and darkness and betrayal are far more complex than we can imagine, which is that you and I are far more complex than we could imagine. We do not always know why we do the things that we do, and we can't always explain why things happen to us the way they did. One scholar, N.T. Wright, has a great comment and says, if we took all that we know from human psychology that we've developed over the last 2,000 years, and we sent a therapist back to Judas to ask him why he did what he did, we still might not know. Judas may have not fully known. And I know, at least for myself, this allows me to create some space between me and Judas. I read the gospel stories. At least I know one guy who's worse to Jesus than I am. The way we think about Judas is how we think about scapegoats, someone who has to bear the weight of sin so that we don't have to. One songwriter I like doesn't let us off the hook so easily. He writes a song about somebody who betrayed an entire community. And he writes the lyrics, on my best behavior, maybe I am really just like him. See underneath the floorboards the secrets I have hid. Historically, it was Judas who betrayed Jesus, but theologically, it was not someone else's brokenness or pain or wounds that Jesus went to the cross for. It was ours. It was ours. It was yours. It was mine. Maybe at times we are more like Judas than we'd like to admit. Now, I can't tell you why Judas betrayed Jesus any more than I can tell you why somebody betrayed you or why you've betrayed somebody else. What I do know is that Jesus never pulls Judas aside to ask him why. I don't know why that is. What I also know is that something surprising, maybe even unbelievable, happens at Jesus' arrest. And you heard it read. It's a dark night. The Passover meal, the Last Supper, has already been eaten, and Jesus knows that his time has come. He knows that his hour has approached, and he cries out to God in the dark. He pleads with God to take this cup, this bitter cup of betrayal from him. Just as he prays, torches pierce the night sky. Suddenly, Jesus is surrounded by a crowd. And there are many faces in the crowd. The local pastors are there. All the congregants from the churches who listened to him teach were there. The people Jesus served alongside are there. The people who waved palm branches just a few days before in the parade with smiles on their faces are there. And in the crowd, one face sticks out. The face of a friend. It's Judas. You can see him there with Jesus amidst all of the fighting and the chaos. And Judas decides to greet Jesus in a very particular way, in a way that's sort of lost to our modern ears. He greets him with a symbol of deep affection and friendship and intimacy, with a kiss. And then Jesus says, friend, do what you came here to do. Did you hear it? At the moment of Jesus' betrayal, at the worst moment of his life, Jesus calls Judas, friend. Can God forgive Judas? I don't know. C.S. Lewis wondered about this question and imagines this moment in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. In that story, Aslan, the Christ figure, is betrayed by Edmund. And after Aslan has come back, he and Edmund have a conversation. What's brilliant about it is that C.S. Lewis never records the actual words of the conversation. He just says, there's no need to tell you, and no one ever heard what Aslan was saying, but it was a conversation which Edmund never forgot. I wonder if Jesus and Judas ever had that conversation. I wonder what Jesus would have said. It's a big question. Can God forgive Judas? Can we forgive those who have betrayed us? Can we be forgiven for betraying others? What I do know is that we can't do it on our own. We can't just will that sort of thing to happen. If you've been betrayed, you know that once the foundation is broken, none of us want to step back into that house again. God doesn't ask that we continue to be friends with those who have betrayed us. But Jesus does ask us to pray for our enemies, even those who persecute us. And there, amidst all of these confusing and complex questions, there is Jesus. Even in the shadows, the dark shadows of his friendship with Judas, is a small flicker of grace. Because Jesus called Judas friend. So maybe, if you can't forgive someone who's betrayed you, maybe Jesus has a shot at forgiving them. Jesus calls Judas a grave sinner friend. And it's what Jesus calls you and me too. No matter what we have done, no matter what we will do, no matter what will be done or has been done to us, Jesus still calls us friend. For no longer I call you servants, but I call you friends. Greater love has no one seen than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. Jesus will go to the cross for all of us friends, and even for Judas. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, thanks be to God.